It's Thursday, September 17th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, my last show here in California before I head home. Got a great one for you. And yes, the audio levels should be much more dialed in tonight. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the OC via the Geek News Central portable studio with a not-so-amazing view of another hotel. Hey everyone, welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. Again, my name is Todd Cochran. Make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, we want to welcome the few people that have joined me so far on Ustream. And of course, we want to give a warm, warm aloha to all of our longtime listeners that are part of the Ohana here of the podcast. Hey, thanks for staying subscribed and being part of the family. We really appreciate your continued support. Of course, we want to welcome all the new listeners to the show. If this is your very first time and checking out the podcast, here are a few things that you really need to do. Go over to geeknewscentral.com, click on the newsletter link, get signed up for our newsletter so that you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. Of course, you might as well get subscribed to the podcast via iTunes or Zune Marketplace, which is back online now with the new Zune HD having been released, or your favorite podcatcher on your mobile media device. That's the way you get the show delivered immediately to your, basically to your mobile phone or to your portable media device. That way you won't ever miss an episode, and you'll stay informed on some of the best tech news in the podcasting space. Of course, I want to welcome listeners from 157 countries that tune into the podcast twice a week. We want to welcome you. And at some point, I'm going to start doing shout-outs to each of those individual countries as we walk through the list. I'll probably start at the very, very bottom with the lowest number of listeners and work my way up. Probably start doing that on the next show. Well, I tell you, it's been a great week here as I got scolded via email. Todd, you're not in L.A. You're in Orange County. But I've spent most of my time up in L.A. and had a great, great week here. Matter of fact, tomorrow I'm going to be meeting, for those of you that are watching on Ustream, with the folks that create these. And you guys know what I'm talking about. I've wore these glasses for a while now on the show from time to time. I've talked about them. And I'm actually going to go to Carlsbad and meet with the company tomorrow. We're going to have a little discussion, I guess. They actually invited me down, so we're going to have a good meeting with their marketing folks and see what we can do to help them out. What else we got going on here? I just do want to put out an apology. I've had four or five of you that wanted to meet up. And really, what has happened is I have been really a victim of Los Angeles traffic. It just seems like when I get done with my meetings in the evening or in early afternoon, I get stuck in rush hour traffic for 2 or 3 hours, and I get back here to the hotel, and I simply just collapse. So next time, I'm going to pick a little different location to stay at. And it will be probably more of a central area for folks to meet up. So big apologies to those of you that wanted to meet up with me and have an Ohana meetup. I will definitely get to you next time. I'll be coming down to L.A. on a more regular basis. But apologies for not having a meetup this week. It just didn't happen. And simply I ran out of hours and really internal CPU cycles. I've had meetings with, I guess, what is 9 companies this week. I fly home on Saturday feeling that I've accomplished a great deal business-wise here. So I'm pretty excited with the way these meetings have went, and look forward to hopefully we'll be able to reap some of those rewards for podcasters in the media space. Hey, you know, I was going to wait to talk about this to the end of the show. Actually, I will. I got a video to share with you. You guys can watch a video. I did an interview with Chris Perillo. We'll talk about that at the end But I got a video to share with you. Lots of comments from listeners. Got a couple of voicemails in tonight. I'm way, 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 way behind on email. Matter of fact, my cell phone right now has about five voicemails that I need to dig through. So we'll get that. For those of you that are on Ustream, the intro tonight was the Trucker Tom travel intro. It wasn't the intro I normally play when I'm home in Honolulu, so you guys know when I'm on the road can tell the difference. Hey, I will be the first to apologize. The last show, boy, oh boy, I should have spent some time on the mixer board making sure that the levels were correct and everything was dialed in. I was not at all happy with the quality of the show the last release. I'm generally more careful with that. I got lax in my duties here in getting the sound the way it should be. So I spent some tonight, of course, before we started recording and getting that dialed in, and I hope that we won't have that problem in the future. Matter of fact, I've added a note. I have basically a spreadsheet I work from when I travel. It's a kind of a checklist, and the checklist now includes check mixer settings. Check levels and make sure they're right. Didn't get any complaints, but I could tell it wasn't the best. All right, let me look here at my list. Again, fly home on Saturday. My wife is all excited. Kids are all excited because the Thunderbirds are in town. So I'm going to take the kids to the air show on Sunday at Hickam Air Force Base. We're going to go watch the Thunderbirds. My 5-year-old's pretty excited. He is ready to go. Actually, my 6-year-old is excited. He's ready to go see the Thunderbirds. They've been seeing them practice from their school, so that's got them all hyped up. So take them down to the air show. We'll have a lot of fun. What else? I think that's basically it. Pretty typical travel week here. Looking forward to getting home back into my own bed for at least a week or two. Travel plans are still to really get out first week of October, get out to the East Coast and be in the DC area. And then back out here in California at the end of October. I'll be in Florida for a week in October as well. Of course, we'll be out at the Blog World and New Media Expo. Matter of fact, that's what I was working on very early this morning. I was working on some materials that have to be into them tomorrow. They gave us pretty short notice on getting some stuff in, so I got to get that wrapped up. Actually, that's what I'll do after the show tonight. I'll get that all packaged up and sent to them. My team members are at Raw Voice are working on essentially the entire booth package. We've got our theming down. I am so excited about our theme for Blog World. It's when you guys see what we have designed, and if you're coming to Blog World, we are going to have the most kick butt t-shirts you have ever seen. And these are limited edition t-shirts. We're printing up enough, but not everyone's going to get one. But if you're going to be a Blog World and you're a listener of this show and you're a podcaster, you definitely want to stop and see us because you're going to want to have one of these. And I think it's going to be the hottest item. And, I got to give credit to Brian, our creative director, because he comes up with these amazing ideas. And I kind of think something up in my head, but I can never really, express myself and visually or even, I have no artistic talent. I draw stick figures, for goodness sakes. So when he showed me the design, we had a few comments. He tweaked it and just, oh, it's going to be amazing. It really, really is. So look forward to rolling that out. And I think what we're going to do is I'm going to try to have him put that once we get through with Blog World, excuse me, we're going to probably put that somewhere online and let people buy it if they want it. I think once they see it, they're going to want one for sure. So if you're coming out to Blog World New Media Expo in Vegas in October, definitely let me know. I'll be speaking there, of course, in two different sessions. So hope you come out, and should be a great event. Okay, let's take care of a little business here. First of all, hey, thanks for all of you that are continuing to support the show here through your purchases at GoDaddy.com. Really, domain names, dedicated servers, virtual dedicated servers, shared hosting accounts for those of you just getting started. This is the place to go. This is the place to save money because you got the best codes in the podcasting space to use when you go over there and pick up a product. Geek5 will save you 15% on your order of $20 or more. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Comsail will get you .coms at a very reduced price. Of course, that Todd 20 code will get you 20%, a big fat 20% off on 1 year shared hosting accounts. Matter of fact, we've had some listeners just recently hook up with that code, and nothing like getting an extra 20% off. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here. Hey, got off the phone today with the basically the sponsors of so many podcasts out there. Actually talked to the folks at Citrix about our upcoming quarter four campaign and what's been happening in quarter three. Want to thank all of you for your continued support and those of you that have done trials with GoToMeeting. Obviously, we're very, very pleased with the results from this quarter. If you haven't got a chance to check out GoToMeeting, I'm going to tell you, this is the absolute best way to have an online meeting. Really, there is no other way. And it's a solution that works every single time. You can send a link via an instant message. You can send an email. You can pre-schedule something. And boom, you have 30 people show up into your GoToMeeting session. You can have everyone on via voice IP. You can share your screen. Other presenters can share their screens. And you can go through. And it's really the only way to have a meeting in these economic times. If you want a 30-day free trial, gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. And probably on the next show, depending upon the email that I get, there's probably going to be, we're going to put together some sort of a special offer through the end of the month. So I'll let you know about that as we're moving forward. Definitely, it's going to be like a kind of, it's not going to be anything where you like get a discount on the product, but it's going to be where we're going to put something together where if you do a try or something through the show, you're going to be able to hook up with a cool prize. So anyway, that's that. Let's go ahead and get into the regular content here tonight. I've got a good stack for you. And, of course, I want to welcome those of you that have joined us over on Ustream. Make sure you go out there and Twitter that. We don't have a lot of folks in here, which is kind of odd, considering that the time of night it is. It's still early here in California. It's only a little bit after after 8. It must be something's good on TV because there's not too many people watching on Ustream tonight. But, hey, the podcast, the audio portion of the audience, you guys are what's count, right? You guys are the ones that really help me keep the lights on and allow me to do what I do. All right, let me go ahead and knock this down and go ahead and open up the my Chrome browser here. And I will say, one thing I'm going to say about Chrome, so far, so good. I can open up multiple tabs, and the memory levels stay within reason. And this thing I have not had any issues with it. So I'm going to knock on wood here. So far, so good. This will be the night that it'll crash. But for this production, it really works well. Here we're on TechCrunch. They just got done with their TechCrunch 50, where they had 50 startups basically go through and give their presentations and pitches. And they also had, I guess, another 50 shows or 50 companies or something like in this back area as well. And I found the article that was posted on TechCrunch today by Sarah Lacey. And she writes in here, memo to startups. Now, I don't feel Raw Voice is a startup anymore. We're well past that stage. We're well established and moving forward. And I keep forgetting, I keep forgetting we've been at this now 4 years going on five. And, we're doing well. We're in the black. We're moving forward. And, that's an important thing. But it says memo to startups. You're supposed to be changing the world, remember? And you know what? I hate to say this to Lacey or to Sarah, but having a business is about maintaining profitability, about paying your employees, about bringing value to those customers that you have. You know, we're supposed to be out here changing the world. But many of these companies that are startups today, they fail because, number one, they don't have a business model. They're not doing so-so stuff. You know, how come companies that are actually moving forward and have a successful model aren't given as much credit as credit is due? You know, everyone thinks that you have to exit with $100 million or $150 or $250 million. You know, those types of deals where companies are started and then, grow very rapidly in 2 or 3 years that get bought for $250 million, they just make a select few people a lot of money. And really, it's a very exclusive group of venture capitalists and maybe 10 or 15 people that are in the company that maybe are part of the start of the company and have founding stock. So there's this small pie of people that get a huge amount of money. But isn't it better to have a company? And I feel this is what I feel about our company at Raw Voice. Isn't it better to have a company that helps hundreds and thousands of people? Isn't it better to be profitable and at the same time help other people make money and be profitable and move forward and give them the ability to do what they do? I think that's what changing the world is all about. It's helping people do things, buy things, accomplish things that they weren't able to accomplish before. That's what it's all about, right? When you're running a business, you want your customers to be happy. You want, not all businesses actually, their business model is actually helping other people make money. That's one of the things that we do at Raw Voice. And okay, we're changing the world one individual at a time. And I think we've accomplished our goal, but I don't think the ultimate goal is to build these. Of course, everyone would love to have a company that was bought like Facebook and have all this investment and excitement. But you know what? You don't have to be huge and multi-millions and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of acquisitions and so forth to actually be successful and change the world. A lot of small companies are out there changing the world, and I hope Sarah pays attention to that. Anyway, I'll have that in the show notes, and I'll continue to share that. I got someone on here says they lost their audio. We should still be good, should still be streaming. Make sure that you, if you've lost your audio, to double check and restream. Looks like the they're dropping a lot of packets, so that might be part of it. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the RIAA. If your kids are in school and of the age where they're going to be talked to by their teachers about copyright, did you know that the RIAA is providing materials that are mostly industry funded that are giving to schools to help them put forth lesson plans about copyright? Are you comfortable with the RIAA telling your kids that taking music without paying for it is illegal and unfair? Do you feel that it's okay for your kids to be told that illegally downloading music hurts more people than they think? Talking about how DVD sniffing dogs help uncover film piracy. Do you think that there is a balanced discussion? Do our kids not deserve that balanced discussion when they're in school? Do they just need to be told file sharing's bad? I wonder what the reaction is, and I don't know what age group that they're targeting these lessons to, but I can imagine there's a lot of teenagers that are probably sharing music with their friends that probably listen to these lectures that they get from the teachers provided by the RIAA and probably roll their eyes. And while we all want to make sure that our kids know that basically the fundamentals about copyright, I don't know if I want propaganda versus education being shoved down their throat. And I'm sure most of you will have mixed feelings about this, but I'd love to hear your comments on what you feel about your kids being taught with RIAA-funded copyright curriculum. You can send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com. And of course, call the voicemail hotline at +1 619 342 7365. All right, those of you that are in college, you can pre-order Windows 7 Home Premium for $30. Microsoft is making a big play for students, helping them upgrade to Windows 7 and making it available for $30. You know what they ought to really do? Windows ought to make Windows 7 available to everyone for $30. So, now, for those of us that are not going to school, Microsoft customers can purchase one of the three different retail versions, ranging from price from $199 to $319. That's a full version, and $119 to $219 for the upgrade version. I'm going to school right now, taking some classes, but as I was, I thought, wow, I got credentials, I can actually pick up some software. And I went over to Adobe thinking, man, I'm going to be able to pick up some Adobe products. And I'm reading through there, and they got funny because I use most of my software that I have and I have purchased. I purchased it full retail, didn't use any type of a student discount. I use most of my software for business purposes. And as I was reading through, I felt, no, as much as I'd love to save big money on a product, I really can't go there. And but it just makes me wonder how many people use educational discounts to buy software through different vendors that offer students discounts, and those software copies end up on machines that are doing business work and so forth. I bet it's something that doesn't, I don't know, I wonder if people exploit that very much. I read through and it says, no, it just didn't ring right with me. And there was a couple of things that they wrote in the requirements and I said, nope, because I know that I'm actually going to be using this for a business. I can't go there. And as much as it made me really want to, I had to spend an extra, put an extra $400 or $500 down where I could have been got it for a couple hundred bucks with a student discount. I knew it just wasn't right. So how many of you, I don't know if anybody will be even willing to respond to this. And if you do and you want to talk about it anonymously, but I would be more than happy to. But how many of you bought software as a student that you've used in your business or for non-student activities? Kind of curious. Love to hear from you guys, geeknews@gmail.com. Okay, let's go ahead. And there's an article over on Tech Vibes. And it's, I should have had this sequenced up earlier when I was talking about the TechCrunch 50. But there's a pretty good write-up here. Any of you that are thinking about doing a startup and starting your own business and trying to find venture funding or trying to pitch even a banker for some money, there's some good tips here. And the first five on this list is grow a thick skin, be prepared to take criticism, perfect your presentation and your pitch, have your product ready for launch, and get a press release ready. You know, one thing I think that I have to laugh now is that all of the individuals that we talked to in the early days of Raw Voice, the number one thing that kept coming out of them was criticism. Primarily criticism about this won't work, it's not a good idea, you'll never create enough volume, all of these negative criticisms, and yet who's still standing, who's profitable, and who's moving forward? We are. And, so I take this stuff with a grain of salt because, there's a lot of educated idiots out there who will give you their opinion, but yet they have very little idea the fortitude that some people have when they're going out and building a business. So while these ideas and suggestions are good, I don't think that anyone should be deterred by some venture capitalists' a skepticism on whether or not your company will succeed or not. It's all about revenue, and these guys are looking for big money turnovers, but I think that be prepared for criticism is a great one, but at the same time, it's a major, major victory for you personally when you prove them wrong. All right, over on 37signals.com, there's an article here, Why We Skip Photoshop. And this is in regards to designing user interfaces for websites. It goes in to talk about, the limitations in Photoshop. And I know a lot of developers will go in and actually make a website design in Photoshop and then have it all ready. And then it gets chopped up and cut up. And then the web developer implements that. But as I was reading through this, this makes sense. And those of you that are web developers out there, I'd love to hear your feedback on this. And if you follow some of the same exact procedures these guys do, they say that we skip a static Photoshop mockup because you can't click a Photoshop mockup. This is probably the number reason why we skip static mockups. They aren't real. Paper isn't real either, but paper doesn't have that expectation. He goes on to say, Photoshop mockup is on your screen. If it's on your screen, it should work. You can't pull down menus in a Photoshop mockup. You can't enter text into a field in a Photoshop mockup. You can't click a link in the Photoshop mockup. On the other hand, paper in a drawing is a real experience when transferred into HTML and CSS. So what this guy does is he draws all his websites out on a piece of paper and then goes straight for the design implementation online. And I thought this was an interesting commentary because I can draw something on a piece of paper. Like I said, I can draw stick figures. So, I could put a web design together on a piece of paper if I hand that to a developer. And as long as I can pick a few colors, I think that's the way to start designing websites. Now, I'm sure many of you are going to say, "Oh, hiss, hiss, that's not the way to do it, Todd." But this is kind of an interesting write-up over on 37signals.com. The link will be up in the show notes, of course, and of course delivered to you via the newsletter when it drops in your inbox. Over on MacRumors.com, the Grand Central Dispatch and OpenCL. And if you guys have heard about what Apple has done, right? Apple has released essentially information to Mac developers that helps them optimize using a multi-core machines. Many of you have Mac Pros. Many of you have MacBook Pros that have quad core in it. And what ends up happening is many of the applications out there, including Final Cut Pro right now, is not optimized. You would think that it would be optimized with the new dual processor quad core machines that Mac Pro has, the Mac Pro that's out. But Final Cut, even today, does not use all the cores. It uses a couple of cores when it's rendering. But these folks have went out, and he has optimized one of his programs for Snow Leopard. For his application called MovieGate, and he sent a benchmark that essentially has shown a 50% increase in video encoding speed when compared to Leopard, and also reducing the CPU loading during video decoding by passing some of the work to the graphics processing unit. So this was all tied in by being able to use the Grand Central Dispatch in OpenCL by bringing significant improvements to his application running on the Mac. Now, I think this is pretty amazing. It's all about speed when it comes to doing an encode. Let me give you a example here. In Leopard, 104 frames. See, okay, let me 100 frames per second. For encoding MPEG-2, he was running 165% CPU load. Now remember, he's running on a multi-core machine. On Snow Leopard, he's able to encode it 150 frames per second for encoding in MPEG-2, and he's seeing a 70% load for decoding, 130% CPU load for MPEG-2 encoding using FFmpeg. So overall, much less CPU loading on Snow Leopard as compared to Leopard, and a much higher frame rate for encoding. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen here as more developers get their act together and make their programs more multi-core compatible, running on, of course, that 64-bit architecture. So it'd be very interesting what we see in performance increase when Apple actually does that to Final Cut. Let's talk a little bit about the Zune HD. Lots of reviews out there. Everyone's raving about the interface. They say the interface is easy to use. The icons and so forth are big enough that you can easily click things and move through it. I'm going to tell you, the thing that still continues to blow me away about the Zune is right on the front screen, you've got at the very top music, videos, pictures, radio, marketplace, social, podcast. This is why Apple, I mean, not Apple, Microsoft continues to add significant numbers of features, is because right on the main screen of the device, when you turn it on, podcasts are listed, and you can easily access podcasts, you can easily sync your podcast. There's a lot that the folks over at Apple can learn, because how many clicks does it take me to get to podcasts? Let me see here. I'm going to open my iPhone up here. Go to the menu and we click on iPod. Okay, that's one. No, I don't see podcast in the fr oh, there it is. First podcast. So two clicks, and what does that do? Does that get me into allowing me to subscribe to nothing? No, I've had to have gone to iTunes and do a third click to actually get into a show, and fourth click to actually play something. So why, and it's not on the front page. I don't see it as a primary menu item. I really don't think that iTunes has helped the podcasting space a lick in the last 3 or 4 years. Ever since their introduction of podcasting support into iTunes, they have done nothing to increase the experience, where the folks at Zune have embraced it and continue to move forward. So, bigger review, of course, on the Zune HD is available. I've looking at the Engadget website. Lots of positive things they say there. And, of course, I have the link up for you in the show notes to check out. Has our new show intro winner received his Zune HD yet? Has it come in the mail? Has FedEx delivered it? I'd love to hear your view once you get it. All right, those of you on Twitter, John lets you make calls via Twitter. All you have to do now is, when you are in Twitter, you do @call, and then you add an @ to the person you want to call, and Jaja helps you make a call directly from Twitter. So they have launched in beta today a voice over IP solution that lets people make calls for free via micromessaging site Twitter and other Twitter-related desktop and mobile applications. This is an effort by Jaja to get its voice IP service onto popular applications. So we'll see what happens with this. I haven't tried it, and I don't know what the process is. I don't know if you have to have an account with them already, because all I can see now is someone @call@geeknews, and then all of a sudden my phone ringing. I'm sure some people will not want that to happen. There has to be some sort of authentication service that you go through to do that. But if anybody's played with it yet, let me know. I'm definitely going to have to check it out, though. Maybe I'll try to call myself. All right, AT&T has bought Spectrum. It plans to leap into LTE. AT&T apparently has learned from its mistakes, and they have went out and picked up 24 licenses covering wireless spectrums in parts of Washington and Oregon, including key markets of Seattle and Portland. The spectrum was acquired from Microsoft's co-founder Paul Allen for an undisclosed sum. How much money do you think AT&T paid him for that? I bet that Paul Allen is going to have quite the tax return this year. Yes, I really do believe that. So I wonder if that will ever come out in there. In their actual, their public reporting when it comes time to announce earnings and expenses and so forth. Hey, I got a link I'm going to provide in the show notes. It'll actually be on the website, of course, as well. It's the article's entitled "What's Wrong with This Picture?" And I think you're going to get a laugh out of this. And in all honesty, I want you to tell me how long it takes you to figure it out. I'm going to bet that most of you are going to get the irony of this picture, you know, within a few seconds. But if it takes you more than a few seconds to figure out what's wrong with the picture, don't feel bad. It took Dave Weiner a couple of minutes to figure it out. For those of you on Ustream, it's over on September 16th post at Dave Weiner's website at scripting.com. You guys can go over and look at it and tell me via chat if you figure it out and got a good laugh for it. All right. It appears that Apple, in their App Store, is starting to employ some new tactics. The first article on this is from a gentleman. It has a blog. It's called martingordon.tumblr.com, and he talks about his Flick Up, it's F-L-I-C-K Up app, that was rejected last week for some keyword issues and a couple of other things. He actually got a call by the app reviewer telling him what really was wrong and to, you know, get the submission back in and so forth, and he was pretty shocked to have gotten that. Another developer who has an app that has been in the top, 25 or so for quite a while, has actually received, actually this company has made over $1 million in the last year for having their app in the top 25. It's an app that costs around $30, so it's an expensive app. He actually has got a private telephone number into Apple now to call with anytime he has issues or so forth. Now, I'm sure that if you're doing $1 million worth of app sales a year, the folks at Apple will probably put you on a VIP list and allow you to, get in there and actually have a, one-on-one chat. But I doubt that if little old me was about to ready to launch our first app, that I would, either get a phone call back or a direct line to Apple. What Apple should do, in all honesty, is they need to have an 800 number for developers. There needs to be a way for the people to call in and find out what their status is. If nothing else, some sort of an automated system to tell you where you are in the queue. They've got a lot of work to do because there's a lot of people that have said, I've had it, I'm done, I'm not developing any more apps. There's an article around Newsweek. Moving on here to the next article. It's by this guy named Daniel Lyons, and he has written a few whoppers over the past couple of years. And the people have been pretty critical of some of his stuff, but he's got this article. It says, "Don't tweet on me," and it's subtitled, "Twitter shows that stupid stuff sells." And really, what he's trying to do here is he is saying that a lot of people that are out there on Twitter are making themselves look like flaming idiots by some of the stuff that they're posting. And he says, Twitter's become a playground for imbeciles, scabby marketers, D-list celebrities, half-wits, and pathetic attention seekers. And he goes on to talk about some actual real celebrities like Shaq and a number of other popular sports figures. And he talks about to some political individuals. He even, links some of this commentary into George Stephanopoulos. I can't pronounce his name. George Stephanopoulos and Al Gore. And, he talks about all these people that are, posting this idiotic stuff on there. Now it's making them look like idiots. I'll be honest with you. People post a lot of stuff on Twitter, but there's a lot of value if you're really following people that have important things to say. I have my Geek News Twitter account that I follow a lot of people on. I follow primarily almost everyone that follows me. And then I have a separate one that's my Geek News Central. It's my show Twitter account that I follow a lot of people, but I don't Twitter on that account. I don't expect people to refollow. Matter of fact, I've actually posted on there. I don't tweet on this account, but it's, I basically have made it a kind of a hybrid account. I have it built in so my RSS feed pulls it and my other Twitter account, and basically I get different information from each feed. The Geek News Central feed, I get a lot of links to articles and news and information. It's really hyper defined to people in the tech space. And then in the Geek News feed is the fans. It's the people that follow the show. It's people that are part of the Ohana, and I want to hear what they have to say as well. And I admit that there's times that there are some people that are in my Twitter list that say stuff that like I do. Well, I'm going shopping. So what? That's what it's for. It's for this like this message board, and you don't have to be tuned in all the time. But I don't think this guy is. It's almost like he's got Twitter envy. He's like he's jealous of what's going on over there. I don't think anyone should be called an idiot or being stupid. People are people, and we all come from different backgrounds and so forth. So again, this guy is really, I feel, off base, and posting that Twitter shows that stupid stuff sells. I really don't I don't buy into this. I don't buy into his thought process here. So, what do you guys think? You have people that you follow. People say certain things. Maybe sometimes someone comes so annoying that you unfollow them. I've had that happen when someone tries to market to me too much. But those of you that are using Twitter, do you think this guy's fair in what he's saying, that Twitter shows that stupid stuff sells and that most people on there are basically trying to self-promote and are idiots? I don't agree. I really, really don't. So anyway, I'll have the link up in the show notes. You guys can read it and then provide me feedback via email. Okay, this is a pretty interesting article. About a year ago, I talked about this guy. His name's Joe Wilcox. He actually posts a over on betanews.com. He's got a running blog over there. About a year ago, he said that I'm leaving Windows. I'm moving to Mac, and he's been on Mac for a while. I guess it's about 9 months or so, and maybe longer than that. Maybe it's close to a year since he switched to a Mac. And now he's saying why I chose Windows 7 over Snow Leopard, and why you should as well. And it's a blog post that talks about his experience in using Windows 7 and some of the things that he's finding out. And he's actually switching back from a Mac to a Windows-based machine because of the new features and that stuff that Microsoft has added to Windows 7 that he thinks is innovative. He goes on to be very critical of Apple, saying that the UI has gotten stale. And I don't know, I think the UI works. So why do you need to, regenerate the UI every time you do an update? I guess that's the user experience, is that we're all expecting to get a new user interface every time a major upgrade happens. But he's got some pretty good points here. So if you are been sitting on the fence and you're a Mac user and you've been thinking about maybe making the jump back over, this might be an article that you'll want to read. Or those of you that are diehard Mac fans, this may be a reason for you to load Windows 7 on Parallels. Okay, how many of you that have gotten the new Zune are downloading apps for it? Most of the apps for the Zune, the first batch of apps are free, so you can download those and you don't have to pay for them. Duh, they're free. You don't have to pay for them. But a variety of apps, and one thing that they're actually seeing too is some of the apps come with pre-rolled advertising, which is interesting. But there are 9 apps available: a calculator, weather, Texas Hold'em, Sudoku, Space Battle 3, Shell Game. In the future, Hexix, Gooseblat, and Chess are going to be available. Oh, actually, they're available from the marketplace already. And what else is available? I think that's initially it. So, not a lot. But one complaint was is that booting the Chess program took 30 seconds. So that doesn't bode well for speed of the processor. But they got a good review of the apps that are available for the Zune HD. I just don't know. I think Microsoft's going to have some uphill battles with this when it comes to actually getting people to develop for it. We'll see what happens. But I don't think they're going to have the groundswell of development like the iPhone did. Over on the Wall Street Journal, this is an article by Walt Mossberg. I had held off. I haven't upgraded any of my machines to iTunes 9 yet. But one thing that I have, and I've read a different number of different reviews, but I think he hit the nail on the head on a couple of the best features. And if you haven't upgraded yet, these may encourage you or incline you to upgrade. He said the two biggest new features in iTunes are something called home sharing and a new, easier way to organize apps on an iPhone or iPod Touch. He says right inside iTunes, you can now simply peer into the shared library of another computer set up on your network. You're allowed to basically pick a song and actually pull it right into your system. You can do this with up to 5 machines. All have been enabled. You guys know how you can enable more than one machine on a Apple account? It can actually authorize 5 machines. Now be very careful. Don't forget when you're getting ready to sell a machine or throw one out or turn it down, pass it down to your kids. To deactivate that account within that machine. But you can share these files with up to as many 5 computers in your household, and it's pretty cool. You drag it from one from the other interface to yours, and it doesn't delete it on the other machine. So I don't know how the music industry is going to feel about that. It works as well for TV shows, movies, and audiobooks. And even in between PCs and Mac, so that's pretty cool. Again, limitation is it works for a maximum of 5 computers. And these computers must be on the same local network, and they must be the same computers authorized to play copy-protected media you buy from Apple. There's some also new things you can do with organizing the apps that are on your iPhone, and of course the Genius mixes and so forth that have been available in the version. What are you guys' experience with iTunes 9 so far? Are you enjoying it? Have you upgraded? Have you set on upgrading because you've heard that it's kind of bloaty and a little fat as far as processor use? That's what I had heard, so that's why I had kind of had waited, as well as some of the negative reviews. So Walt's review was really the first review I saw that was at all positive. Okay, music industry. The music industry wants royalties from iTunes 30-second samples. You know, when you're iTunes and you're going through an artist list and you click the little play button and you get a 30-second sample of the music. For me, half the time I don't remember what the song names are, so I haven't got a clue. You know, I go and maybe I know the artist, or I've heard something on the radio and I say, oh, I want to buy that tune, and I go maybe to their top 50 or top 100 seller list, and I have to listen to 10 or 15. Oh, there it is. That's, okay, I'm an old guy. All right, so that's how I find music that I actually want to purchase. Well, it appears that ASCAP and BMI feel that iTunes needs to pay performance fees for those songs that they're playing for 30 seconds. They got to pay a little fee for every time someone clicks play. Greedy, greedy, greedy. Hello. What I wouldn't buy the music if I couldn't sample it. If I can't sample it and hear it's the actual song that I want to buy, I'm not buying it. So they're getting a sale. The artist is making money because Apple's paying ASCAP and BMI every time a sale is made. They have lost their minds. Greedy, greedy, greedy. Guess what? If they actually employ this and make Apple pay for those 30-second samples, I will never, ever buy another piece of music off of iTunes ever. They're just doing it wrong. They don't get it. They don't get it. The young kids, yeah, they know what all the songs are. They know who all the hip artists are. I'm sorry, I don't pay attention to that. I hear the song on the radio. That's what's cool. Let me go figure out which one it was. I buy it, then it gets it into my iPod. Otherwise, it doesn't get there. All right, those of you that are BlackBerry users that have converted to the iPhone, I have something for you. Okay, if you have been missing your BlackBerry, what do they call it that you guys that get like carpal tunnel for typing on your BlackBerry? They've got a keyboard sleeve now that turns your iPhone into a BlackBerry. Now, I'm gonna fair warn you here. This is a very slick device. It looks really nice. Costs $29.99. If someone actually buys this, please let me know. Let me know how it works. Do not open this up around Apple users or iPhone users, because I think you'll take a lot of heat. Oh gosh, where will it end? People will, hey, habits are hard to break. Okay, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the lunar orbiter that's out there. The lunar orbiter has begun its long-awaited mapping mission. Actually, NASA has released some pictures, pretty amazing stuff. They've been on the news today. Lots of secrets the moon is revealing. They're getting a very detailed mapping of the moon. They're being able to tell what temperature it is down in some of the impact zones from meteorites. There's all kinds of cool stuff that they're finding out there. They even think that there might be indication of hydrogen and possibly water ice deposits in permanently shadowed craters near the moon's south pole. So I'm sure we're going to hear some more on that. Water on the moon. Yeah, I'm sure about a thimble amount. A thimbleful, if anything. Oh gosh. Do you think that's possible? Well, maybe, because they're saying the temperature in some of these craters that are shadowed is like minus 400 Kelvin. That is, no, 33. Let's see here. Indeed, one of the LRO instruments shows that the temperature in such craters never rises above about 33 Kelvin or minus 400 degrees. Okay. Yeah, it was a big difference. Minus 400 Kelvin. I don't think that's even possible. Yeah, minus 400 degrees. That's cold. That's some pretty instantaneous frostbite there. All right, those of you that are gamers or have spouses that are gamers, Swedish group calling gaming addiction a pandemic threat. A Swedish organization called the Youth Care Foundation claims that computer gaming addiction is reaching pandemic proportions around the world. And then, of course, this is the same group that called the World of Warcraft the cocaine of the computer games world back in February. So, you know, they're on track to be a serious naysayer of gaming. But, you know, I have to admit, I know that I have a very low resistance. If I got on some sort of a game, I wouldn't get anything done. I would be, besides being as busy as I am, whatever leftover hours I would have available would probably be spent gaming, and I'd probably be divorced. I think it's really a problem out there. And, you know, I'm hearing from time to time from listeners of this audience, I get private emails asking me, especially the ladies, Todd, what do you, you know, what do you do? What do you, you know, what do you recommend I ask or tell my husband about his gaming habits? It's a tough one. It really, really is. And if you have a spouse that's, you know, paying more attention to gaming than they are to you, you know, maybe it's time for a serious sit down. But I think they have a certain point here that gaming is reaching pandemic levels. I know that maybe I'm an old fogey here. I don't game. You guys know I don't for that specific reason. But, you know, I got it. There's, you know, my neighborhood. There's kids that I have never seen before. Never. Never seen them out. We spend a lot of time outside. My kids are forced. I force them out. And, you know, I get this every once in a while. My son will come in. Hey, Dad, did you know that there's a kid my age that lives six houses down? I'm like, are they new? And he's like, no, I've never seen him before. And it turns out he's inside gaming, never comes outside. So I'm sure if all the PlayStations, Xboxes, Wiis were taken away from kids for a couple months, I'm sure we would probably see a lot more kids outside. But definitely in my neighborhood, it's making an impact. All right, Sprint is willing to fill Clearwire's coffers. Sprint Nextel is willing to invest more money in Clearwire, the WiMAX operator it helped create last year, and plans to maintain its 51% ownership in the company, Sprint CEO Dan Hesse said today. So it looks like they are committed to continue to the build-out and continue to put money in Clearwire's pockets. This is good news for Clearwire. It really, really is. This will help their bottom line and probably will allow them to get more funding and bank loans and so forth as they need. So we'll see what happens here. Sprint's got to make a game play somewhere if they don't get bought by T-Mobile first. Imagine you are writing to a newspaper criticizing your local councilman. And most papers have a place where you can do a public poll so you can submit an anonymous article. And most newspapers will print it so long as it's not salacious and, you know, it meets the you know, the level that's needed for public, you know, public information. It appears, though, that a anonymous individual was flooding a Wisconsin paper's website with comments about the a local town politician. And ultimately, what the newspaper did after the councilman asked the newspaper for the email address of the person that was posting it, the newspaper dimed this guy out. And the politician then sent a letter on official stationery telling the commenter, which was a local business person, to stop the personal attacks and come out from behind the cloak and meet him. You know, if I was in that town, I would immediately cancel my subscription from that newspaper. So if you live in Wausau, if you get the Wausau Daily Herald, you may want to send a letter to your local newspaper and complain. But that's pretty serious stuff. And this wasn't like it was a legal action. There was no lawsuit in place. But this paper, you know, just gave this guy's name up. So I was actually, someone's asking a question in Ustream. It says at the top of the window. I don't know what it means. I'm showing on my, I don't know. There's a number, the number of people that are watching, and then there's the number of people that have been on here. So if it's like whatever the ratio is, it's the number that have popped on and the number of people that have jumped off. So I don't know how it actually how they actually work the counting. I see a counter on my side. It doesn't match the number you're saying in the chat there. Sorry about that. I was just responding to a chat that was happening in Ustream. All right, HP has updated their Windows Home Server line with the MediaSmart EX490 and the EX49 server models. And it looks like what they have done here is they're basically the same on the surface, but the EX490 is a 1 terabyte server powered by an Intel Celeron 450 2.2 gigahertz processor, while the 699 EX495 is a 1.5 terabyte server packing a speedy multitasking Intel dual core E5200 2.5 gigahertz processor. Each has 2 gigs of RAM, eSATA, and is a includes a redesigned Windows Home Server console. So everyone's saying if you're going to be getting one of those, make sure that you buy the EX495. It's got the heavier processor in it. And that's one thing I must say about my Windows Home Server. I've got the original one. That baby is really underpowered. It takes a long time to get through the menus now. But still haven't decided whether or not I want to upgrade and spend the money. So far, it's still doing its job, so I guess that's important. All right, those of you that have jailbroke your phone, there's a new Apple iPhone jailbreaking tool available. The iPhone dev team has released a new tool to enable users to jailbreak and unlock Apple iPhone version OS 3.1. The new Pwnage 2 3.1 is available, and you can jailbreak both the iPhone 3G and the first editions of the phone and iPod Touch. The tool, however, does not support the iPhone 3GS or second or third generation of the iPod Touch. So be aware there of what it will do. Actually, what did it just say? That's a contradiction in the article. It says the Pwnage tool 3.1 for Mac OS X users can jailbreak both the iPhone 3G and the first edition of the iPhone and iPod Touch. It will not support the 3GS, though. Okay, that makes sense. All right. So if you've got a 3GS, you won't be able to use this new Pwnage tool. All right, congratulations to the Japanese. Japanese cargo ship completes a smooth docking with the International Space Station. The Japan New HTV cargo ship carrying more than 7,000 pounds of supplies and equipment was plucked out of the open space by the International Space Station's robotic arm to complete a near-flawless automated rendezvous, making a major milestone for the station program. This is huge. This is huge. This is, you know, this thing has not been in space very long. They made the link up, grabbed it, it's docked, they're unloading it. Congratulations to the Japanese, I guess it's JASF or something like Japanese something space program, aeronautical space program or something like that. All right, let's talk a little bit about a contradiction in articles. It wasn't too long ago, we were talking about Arctic ice. And how Arctic ice was being reported to have been the biggest freeze over in many, many years. Well, now it's being reported by Reuters that the Arctic ice pack melted this summer to its third smallest size on record, up slightly from the low points of the past 2 years, but continued overall shrinking trends. And of course, they go into climate change, blah, blah, blah. Now, here's the question I have. Is they said that this winter, or this past, you know, we talked about this before, that the ice had, you know, during the wintertime, had grown back to its normal levels. So, you know, I don't know what to think about this. You know, is it global warming or is it global cooling? What's going on? I guess we can have the best of both worlds. It freezes up in the winter and melts in the summer. I guess that's what ice is supposed to do, right? All right, Google is letting you custom print millions of public domain books. So now, in a conjunction with, it's called Google Book Search in partnership with On Demand Books, and readers can now turn those digital copies back into paper copies, individually printed by bookstores around the world. And this can only be done by those bookstores that have ordered its $100,000 Espresso book machine, which cranks out a 300-page grayscale book with a color cover in about 4 minutes. That's pretty amazing. Cost the bookstore $3 for the materials, and then they sell it for whatever price, I guess, that their markup is. But they have to buy the $100,000 Espresso book machine. So if you're looking to get an out-of-print book, this is the way to do it. And I'm sure there's going to be a cottage industry set up where you can just order this stuff online and it'll be delivered to you just like they do at all the major online booksellers. Although, this is out-of-print books that you can get. All right, those of you that live in Massachusetts, For the first time, the state's highest court there ruled that the Declaration of Rights allowing police to break into suspect cars to secretly install GPS tracking devices prior to they have a warrant before they act is allowed. So Massachusetts top court is okay to use a secret GPS tracking devices. So as long as the police hold a warrant, they can break into your vehicle, install the tracking device, and there is no, nothing you can do to say that this was an infringement of your rights. This is all involving a case of a drug dealer who was tracked by a police department, and actually state the police after they installed a GPS in his minivan. Hey, what a way to know where all the drug dealers are at. That's a great, for that reason, I applaud. So, hey, if you've got enough stuff going on where you have a search warrant coming against you, yeah, I think you got bigger problems than worrying about a GPS being installed in your vehicle. All right, over on Wired's Epicenter, Wall Street Journal takes paywall fight to mobiles. Dow Jones will start charging next month for the Wall Street Journal stories developed via its iPhone and BlackBerry apps. The price on that is going to be $2 a week for those who subscribe to the journal. $2 a week for those who do not subscribe to any journal properties, and $1 for those who get either pay for the print edition or the WallStreetJournal.com website. So here's the math. Print is $2.29 a week. A a la carte in WallStreetJournal.com is $1.99, but bundled, it costs you $2.69. So if you're getting both the print and WSJ.com for $2.29, 40 extra cents for the iPhone edition. I think just, reading the newspaper, I hate to say it, I tried reading the Wall Street Journal on my Kindle. When it comes to the journal, paper's best. It really, really is. The print edition at $2.29 a week, that's really the way to go. I don't even go into WallStreetJournal.com and getting the online version. I still like the print version of the journal. Now, other newspapers, it may be okay, but so if you are taking the paper, the mobile access, and the WallStreetJournal.com website all combined, it's $52 more a year than you would have to pay. It's $52 if you more a year if you don't take all three as a bundled package. So I'm sure you're totally confused because I am. They got numbers all over this article. Link will be in the show notes. You guys can read it. Hey, we want to give a shout out. Jeff, our team member from Blueberry and from Raw Voice, is going to be at PodCamp Montreal this upcoming weekend. If you're going to be at PodCamp Montreal, make sure you say hello to Jeff. We've, of course, sponsored PodCamp Montreal again this year. And if you're going to the event, it should be a great one. I think they're already completely fully sold out, but I'm looking forward to hearing the report of what's happening in Canada from PodCamp Montreal. But Jeff will be there this weekend. We got upcoming PodCamp Philly and PodCamp Pittsburgh. I'm going to try to make one of those, okay? I'm going to really try to make the Philly one. So if everything goes right, I'll be at PodCamp Philly. Fingers crossed. And we are sponsoring PodCamp Philly as well. All right, Chris Prillo did an interview of me when he was out in Hawaii. And it was right around the time that the Volo Media podcasting patent popped. And he's got an article over on his website saying, will podcasts be patented? And it's about a 4-minute and 20-second video of me basically sharing my thoughts and being very careful in my commentary. You definitely want to check out that YouTube video. Retweet it as you feel necessary. I have the link up to it in the show notes. But Chris did a great job with the video. Actually, I thought, hey, that's a place where I need to do interviews again with the backdrop of the ocean behind me. And so anyway, I'll have that link up in the show notes. You guys can watch it. All right, let me go ahead here. Let me see where we're at on time. When I'm running this configuration here, hour three, so we're doing okay on time here. I've got two voicemails. Let me go ahead and get these queued up. I have not listened to these already, so hopefully there's no surprises here. Let me go ahead and play the first voicemail, +1-619-342-7365. Here comes the first voicemail. Here we go.
Hey, guys, it's Ben from Philly. Just wanted to compliment on an Apple thing. You know, I had an iPod Touch for about almost a year now, and I really enjoy the product. But lately, the updates to me have been real, like, just selfish. And the way they've been coming out with the products just seem like they're trying to, how can I say that? They're trying to extend it so they can make more money. Like, they're saying that they couldn't fit the camera in the iPod Touch, but they'll make more money if they release the Nano and then wait a year and then release the iPod Touch with the camera. So, you know, I just think they're just trying to gorge more money from the customers. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's just the way I see it. Like, the iTunes update, you can't even use a third-party cord. Somehow they put software in there. If you got a third-party USB cord, anything past iTunes 8.2, it don't sync with your iPod. And I just think Apple's been selfish lately. But love the show. Enjoy your day.
If you have a third-party USB cable that plugs into your iPod with iTunes 8, it won't allow you to sync anymore? Boy, that's news to me. What? Because a USB cable is a USB cable, but you know the connectors should be wired for their spec. You know, if this is an interesting comment that you just made, do you have access to an ohmmeter? Do you have a buddy that's maybe a techie? If you do, what I'd love to have you do is take that cable that you have that doesn't work anymore and actually have your buddy pin for pin ohm that cable out and see where the difference is. See what's maybe missing in that cable. Because believe me, this is not a complicated cable. It really isn't. So love to hear what you find out on that. Or tell me the manufacturer of that cable. Maybe we can do some more investigation on it. But, you know, so far as Apple being stingy, I don't know. You know, it's Apple's being Apple. And, you know, I think it's silly that they've locked out the Palm Pre. Is this affecting other people with non-iPod players? Are able to sync? Because you used to be able to sync a regular MP3 device with, you know, basically any type of USB-connected media device. You'd be able to sync that with iTunes. Is anybody else doing that now? Are you guys locked out? Are they not allowing you to do that? I'd love to hear your feedback. Anyone else has got any comments on that? +1-619-342-7365. And thanks for your call. Really do appreciate it. Let's go ahead and get the next comment here.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Trucker Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Regarding the Japanese version of the RIAA wanting to lock down, quote-unquote, the music or the MP3 files that are played on Japanese mobile phones, and then, you know, the phone having to kind of phone home, so to speak, to the server to make sure that the file that they're playing is legitimate. How would that work with podcasts? If someone put a podcast or, you know, just some sort of an MP3 file on their phone and it tried to phone home to find out if that was legitimate or not, how would that work? And then if they're going to do it for mobile phones, then what's to stop them from doing it with MP3 players? Do you think it's a play? Who's behind that? Are the MP3 player manufacturers behind that to try to stop people from using their mobile phones as MP3 players and to try to keep MP3 players a viable market? Good question. So I don't know, but I think that's pretty onerous. And if I was a Japanese citizen, I'd be pretty upset. So, anyway, great show. Keep up the great work. See you out in Vegas.
I'm looking forward to see you out in Vegas, too. It's going to be a good time, and, of course, we're going to have a great party, as always, and definitely look forward to seeing you to that event as well. Hey, I'm going to tell you, when I get home, I will get my wife cornered, and we'll get her sister on the phone, who's the youngest of the group, who actually works. She's a head muckety-muck at a cell company. What company does she work for? Probably I shouldn't say in case someone here listens and gets her fired. But she's a pretty high muckety-muck actually in Okinawa with one of the cell companies. And I'll get her on the phone, and I'll see if I can get enough translation going through and see if we can figure out where this is coming from. In all honesty, you know, I don't know what the DRM policy is in Japan. I know we've got a number of listeners to this show, but I know most of those are expats that are living there, and they mostly have, you know, machines where they actually get iTunes. They have U.S. iTunes accounts because they got American credit cards. So they don't run into this issue, but maybe they can do some snooping around for us and find out what's going on and report back. But, you know, this could be a move. You know, maybe they're, you know, they're in the same stages that we were before on DRM. You know, I think we've overcome the DRM hurdle here, and it's basically it's in the rearview mirror based upon what Apple has done and the variety of sites that you where you can get DRM free music. So only time will tell. Again, look forward to seeing you out in Vegas. And, you know, just coincidentally here, Trucker Tom, your email to me on some articles you submitted to me is first things up in our email commentary tonight. Go ahead and jump into this. If you have comments on tonight's show or any other topic that you may find that deems worthy for the listening audience to hear, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, that's email accounts available 24/7, just like everything else here. And send me your comments and commentary. All right, Tom, the first thing you got up here is Verizon boss hangs up on landline phone business. This is, as the article's writer says, roll over in your grave, Alexander Graham Bell. This is amazing here. Verizon is getting out of the landline phone business. They're done. This is huge. Huge, huge, huge. Now, does that mean they're getting out of the Fios business? No. Does this mean they're getting out of the video and internet services business by offering voice IP packages? No. But they're saying here, Verizon is saying for their landline, for their, you know, their connected customers, that video is going to be the core product in the fixed line business. And the focus will move from selling bundles of video and landline to video and cell phones, he added. So they're trying to convert most of their landline operations to Fios. And this new opportunity will cost, you know, essentially they're going to be cutting costs on Fios accounts. This is going to be big. And Verizon, hey, folks, I'm going to tell you, if you need a place to stay in Honolulu, I've got some great people in the travel business. I'd be happy to arrange to make sure you get some discounted rooms in Hawaii. Why don't you bring a Verizon Fios to Hawaii? And matter of fact, I'll buy the fries and the corporate leadership some dinner. You guys come out there and get going. I wonder what it would take to bribe some Verizon guys to come out and get busy in Hawaii and bring Fios to Hawaii. Gosh, we need it. We really do. Trucker Tom, thanks for that. I know you got another article for me here, too. It says, in the title of this, Do Living Cells Make Noise? A Los Angeles scientist says living cells may make distinct sounds, which might someday help doctors hear diseases. Now, you guys remember on Star Trek, right? You had the doc put the little device right on the person. Well, you know, maybe he was actually listening for sick cells, not sickle cells, sick cells. So this guy goes on to say that kids, lawnmowers, planes, trains, automobiles, just about everything makes noise. And if these two California scientists are right, so do living cells. You know what they're probably doing in my body? They're probably screaming, let me out of here. All right, I got an email from Keith. I get this email about once every 2 or 3 months. And it just seems like this email continues to make the rounds. It's the pictures of the Pearl Harbor attack that were come out of an old Brownie camera. You guys, I've gotten this so many times, I don't need it anymore, okay? We all know about this picture. If you haven't seen about it, just search on the internet, Brownie Camera Pearl Harbor Pictures, and you'll be able to see the pictures of this supposed Brownie camera that was found and the film was developed, blah, blah, blah. Got an email from Martin. He's out of Galway, Ireland. He says, hey, Tom, sorry to hear about your frustrating experience with unmanned toll booths while in California. He says, here in Ireland on M50 motorway in Dublin, they have implemented electronic tolling. When you drive past a checkpoint, a camera takes a picture of your car's registration plate. You have then until 8 p.m. the next day to pay the toll. You can pay at most convenience stores, and also they sell prepaid sell credit. Only after you miss the APM next day deadline do they make you pay a late fee. There's also option for an RFID tag you can put in your windshield for frequent users. Perhaps they could implement something similar in California, but I guess they would not have the financial motivation to get rid of those juicy $55 fines. I hope they make sense to you and not fine for you. Hey, Martin, they do. They've got here in the States all over the place. They've got these fast pass. It's depending on where you are in the country and depending on what highway system you're on. And yeah, maybe Trucker Tom can answer this question. Tom, I know you drive all over the country and you're on toll roads all the time. Do you have to have a different device for every toll road you're on or different states you're in? Do you have a whole bunch of those RFID readers? I've tried to figure out how I can get one and just have one to travel with me because I get binged every time I go to D.C. I get binged all over the country. You know, down in Florida, they got toll roads. But I haven't got whacked again. Now, I did get a link from one of the listeners of the show. He said, Todd, go here, let them know that you've what exit it was, what your driver's license is, and you can pay the thing online. I've attempted to do that. I don't know if I've had any success. I'll let you know if I get a ticket. But I'm fully expecting to have to pay $55 over 15 cents. And I do have about $5 and quarters in my car now, so I should be good for those unmanned toll booths. Got an email from Andrew Darlow. He's a longtime listener of the show, lives out in Jersey, great photographer. Andrew says, hey, this is totally non-tech but cool. Pocket reference to shoe lacing iPhone application. A shoe lacing iPhone application, Andrew? I haven't looked at this yet, but I'm going to have to check it out. Is this different ways you can lace your shoes? Listen, brother, I live in Hawaii. We don't have shoes where we have to tie. If we're not wearing slippers, we're wearing those, wearing shoes that you can slip your feet in without having to actually tie them. I'm just kidding. I have dress shoes. But, most folks in Hawaii, we don't, we try very little to wear closed footwear. Here in California, obviously, I'm dressed for business attire. All right, moving on here from Ken. He said, hey, Todd, just caught up about four shows behind the last couple of days. Wow, you were listening for a long time. He said, I live in Illinois, the state of political corruption, you know. Ha, ha, ha. He says, we have unmanned toll booths. If you don't have change, you can go to the Illinois toll website and enter their information, pay the missed toll, and avoid the fine. Check to see if they have something like that for California. Yes, they do, like I just said. He says, for the shower head, I use a vinegar water solution. I think that's what most people use. My wife uses bleach for some reason. We use that a lot for cleaning, and it's just not bad for people like bleach is. I just unscrew the shower head, completely spray with vinegar and water solution, let it soak well, then brush it and rinse it really well. P.S. I do like the new intro, but it's just a little too long. You know, Ken, it's a whole like 9 seconds longer than the older one. Got an email from Bama Jeff. He says, hey, Todd, I don't think MFS is going to lock up the cell networks, period. It's sent via his BlackBerry. So we'll see what happens, Bama. I got an email here. Oh, that's it. That's all the emails we got. Pretty short email list this week. Ah, much better show. It helps when I've had sleep, when I've had to sit down and properly prepare for the show. And anyway, I think this was much better than the last show. Appreciate you guys putting up with my tiredness on the last podcast, and I was really disappointed with myself. But, you know, I'm my own worst critic. As always, hey, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, voicemail hotline +1. 619-342-7365. Next week, back in the studio in Honolulu, late recordings. It'll be more like 11 o'clock Pacific time when I come up online to do the show instead of, finishing up here at 9 p.m. PST. So you guys make sure that if you want to watch a show, shift your time zones a little bit. Of course, we'll be having a replay of the podcast on the website as well when I'm home with the TriCaster. Got a little bit to talk about JVC when I get home as well. So some information I'm going to talk about there, something to share with you guys. But I guess that's it from the OC here in, just outside of LA. I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Take care, and thanks for listening. Aloha.